And we are live on YouTube. Kyle, did you make it okay?
I made it. I don't know about okay. I mean, all right. Yeah, yeah, mostly.
Rob Gila?
We are here.
Are we on YouTube?
YouTube has yet to catch up.
We have just gone live.
It is just starting.
Huh.
Thanks to the delay.
I went live a while ago. YouTube is so far behind. What you're hearing happened already. That's you know, it says live, but it's not live.
Okay, but we now hear us on YouTube, and we're sounding good.
Alex, are you now a fan of Laurie Anderson?
That was better than last week's, but it was still pretty discordant and annoying.
All right, we'll keep trying. We'll go through her entire catalog if we have to. We'll find a song that you like.
All right,
we'll whistle as you walk down the street. But
fantastic. I'd love to just the random German thrown into the song. It's really, that was a nice touch.
German is hardly random, Alex. It's very purposeful, but I can see how you might think that.
But I mean, why would you torture the listeners in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut?
I think you just answered your own question, because it's New York and Laurie Anderson is New York.
I mean, we want to encourage people to support WBA and not turn the dial as soon as they tune in.
Well, it's a process, all right? And many people, it takes time for them to realize what is truly amazing and what is not.
All right. Well, if you say so.
Yeah. So you want to continue talking about the tornado cash people?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm happy to talk about it. And I'd love for listeners to call in and ask or to talk about it. I'd love to hear their feelings on this, too, because I really do think that there's going to be, a real chilling effect here on the open source community, especially if developers can be prosecuted for people misusing their code. This is going to have very, very significant ramifications for people who are builders, people who are developers and real doers, and that very much describes our community.
I have a question, Alex.
Sure.
Is there any indication from your vantage whether folks who had availed themselves of this technology or code itself, using that code base, has anyone that has implemented it had a sense that it's disrupting their model, whether it be a business or other venture, that basically this will be broadly felt from people who were taking advantage of what was being given away? Or are there other sort of competing services that maybe don't open source the means with which they use this for transactions? Is there any kind of concern that it's more the type of service they're providing and less about publishing the how of it? Or I don't know, where does this fall comparatively, I guess, is my question.
Well, I think a really great question, and I think I know the answer to it partly, but not entirely. I mean, there are other privacy-enhancing technologies out there with respect to various blockchains. There's Monero, there's Zcash, there are things that have been around for a while that enhance privacy. And in fact, the government brought these up in their closing statement as examples of why something like Tornado Cash wasn't needed. But it completely misses the point that, you know, for specific types of currency that are and transactions that happen on, let's say, the Ethereum blockchain, there is no financial privacy other than spinning up a new wallet and creating a new wallet and then having your transactions associated with a brand new wallet that isn't associated with you. So this issue of financial privacy is something that really needed to be solved. And really, it goes back to this hackathon in 2019. And the hackathon had to deal with privacy technology, and Tornado Cash was the winner of this hackathon at ETH Boston. And they won this award, and then they actually received venture capital money from Dragonfly, a VC fund, into their company called PepperSec. And it was through this company, very openly, in the United States. This was Roman Storm, who was the CEO of the company. And they developed this, and they open sourced the software and the protocol, and they allowed everybody to inspect it. And it was incredibly effective and very, very well used. And it wasn't disrupting, I would say, the traditional finance systems or networks, because they haven't really adopted or exist within the Ethereum blockchain. So this was, I think, a very popular service on Ethereum, and it has obviously a financial use case associated with it. And the government had alleged a financial motive with respect to Storm, claiming that he personally profited from the sale of these TORN tokens that were funding the operations, and that they could have essentially turned off the lights and the spigot for Tornado Cash once they knew that it was being used by bad guys, by stopping to pay developers, by shutting down the front end, changing the code on the front end, making it more difficult for people to access, even though, because it was deployed as an immutable contract on the Ethereum blockchain, people could always access these transaction pools in one way or another. So it's a really tricky case. The closing statements were today. I thought the defense did a great job at raising reasonable doubt here with respect to the motivations of Storm and PepperSec when they created this Tornado Cash system. And the government also did, I think, a very good job at presenting their case and lining up the evidence that shows that, you know, these guys knew that bad guys were using this and didn't really know what to do in response to it. So, you know, this raises another issue. If you create something and you know that bad guys are using a system that you created, what's your legal obligation at that point? Let me go back to something that goes back, that harkens back to the first day of trial here. And this was, I thought, a really great analogy that the government came up with. And they said, to trying to explain to the jury how Tornado Cash works with respect to mixing up transactions on the blockchain, is, you know, imagine you're in an action movie. And these types of images and stories and things are always great for juries as well. So he said, imagine you're in an action movie and the police are chasing a bad guy down an alley, and the alley's got all these twists and turns, and the camera's going from one angle to another, and it's jerking around. And you see the bad guy, and he's wearing this black hat and a green hoodie, and he's going around these various angles, and you're chasing him. And then all of a sudden, he goes around one corner out into an open street. You follow him around that corner, and boom, you lose track of him because now he's in a sea of people all wearing black hats and green hoodies, and you have no idea who the bad guy is anymore. The prosecutors in their opening statement said that's what Tornado Cash does for bad guys. It allows them to hide amidst everything else. Now, if I were on the other side of that, if I were on the defense side, I think the way in which I would have approached retaliating or rebutting that argument would have been to accept it as true, because that's a really great analogy as to how Tornado Cash works. That's exactly how it works, in fact. If you think about it, yeah, you're chasing a bad guy. That bad guy goes into the sea of other people that look just like him, and you can't figure out who they are. But what the government failed to tell the jury at that point was that that other sea of bad guys, I'm sorry, that other sea of people into which he ran that had a black hat and a green hoodie, they were not bad guys. They were the legitimate users of this privacy-enhancing technology called Tornado Cash. Because if only bad guys used Tornado Cash, it wouldn't work. You need legitimate users. You need real transaction pools to be mixed in with in order to mask your transactions. It doesn't work if only bad guys use it. So I would have said that is exactly right. Remember exactly what they said, but just also remember that other sea of people, those are the legitimate users. But that's not what the defense did in the opening statement. That's what I would have done. But of course, hindsight's always 20/20. Nonetheless, I thought it was a good analogy, and I'd love to hear what our callers think.
You could have leapt up in the middle of court and said that. You know, it works in 1950s yeah. movies. If you were Jimmy Stewart, you would have done it.
Yeah, that would have been something. That would have probably made the papers as well.
So why are they picking on Tornado Cash? They can't be the only ones that can be accused of this.
Well, I think it's because it's the most popular one, and it's the one that nation-state-level threat actors and a lot of fraudsters had used to launder money. And the fact that some of these bad guys were doing this, they're claiming the Tornado Cash founders profited from bad guys using this to launder their funds. Now, there's a lot of bad evidence out there that indicates perhaps that the Tornado Cash guys knew this, but even if they knew that their technology was being used by some bad guys, again, what are the legal implications? What are the legal implications for Signal, knowing that massive amounts of drug dealers use this to communicate with their drug users?
Okay, let me ask a simple question here. So they're saying Tornado Cash benefited directly from these bad guys. Did Tornado Cash know when they benefited from these bad guys? I mean, could they tell, oh, this is money from a bad person, or this is just money that came in from somebody? How can they distinguish?
Yeah, it would be tricky to tell, but there were always these big spikes of transactions associated with Tornado Cash in the wake of major breaches like the Ronin breach, the Axie Infinity breach, et cetera. Yeah, and hundreds of millions of dollars was being laundered through Tornado Cash in that respect. And it was known that the Lazarus Group, which is associated with North Korea, used Tornado Cash to launder money. And there really wasn't much that they could do about it. But again, going back to the Signal analogy, what is Signal supposed to do about nefarious characters using its end-to-end encrypted messaging technologies?
Yeah, what I'm trying to get my head around is, what did the government expect them to do to avoid being put in this situation? If they can't identify who the bad guys are, how can they stop providing service to the bad guys?
Well, that was one of the things that came up today in the closing statements as well, because the government was recounting some testimony from an expert witness that basically came up with an idea as to how Tornado Cash could have solved for this issue, but they decided not to solve for this issue, so therefore they must have had the criminal intent to profit from this. It's a non sequitur, it doesn't follow. And also, this particular expert's idea was a bit insane. They wanted to create a user registry of everybody that could be a legitimate user of Tornado Cash, and then only allow these legitimate users to use the service, which defeats the entire purpose of having financial privacy on the blockchain. So creating a white list, essentially, of users, or an allow list of users, really would defeat the entire purpose. This user registry was kind of a crazy idea. Everybody chuckled at this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, parallel that to, say, a whistleblower not being taken seriously unless he registers himself as a whistleblower with the, you know, Union of Whistleblowers somewhere. And you know, nice files are kept. That way we know it's not just anybody. It's not somebody hacking into a system. It's somebody who belongs, you know, in there. It works for a company and, you know, actually has access to that information. That would be kind of absurd, wouldn't it? Because it would sort of take away the whole purpose of revealing something that people don't want you to reveal.
Well, I'll tell you this, too. And here's another weird connection that this case has to 2600 and in particular to the HOPE conference. And this was just a bit of a shock to me, too, because I was sitting through the first couple of days of testimony, because there was testimony from a witness that was associated with the Ethereum name service that actually the government had called and subpoenaed a grant recipient of ENS. So I went over there to watch the testimony. And the government called an FBI agent by the name of Joel DiCapua to testify on the government's behalf that Tornado Cash was being used by a bunch of bad guys to launder their money. Now, that FBI agent, Joel DiCapua, was a speaker at the last HOPE conference a couple of years ago. Actually, I think it was, it must have been, I think it was the 2022 HOPE conference. It was the first one that we had in at St. John's. And he was a speaker on a panel that I put together, along with Jay Kramer, who is the head of the managing director of National Cyber Forensics Training Alliance in New York, and Sagar Ravi, who was the head of the Computer Crimes Unit at the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York. He's since left, but that's the office that's prosecuting this particular case. And Joel DiCapua was an FBI agent that focused on cybercrime. And we were talking about the changes to the U.S. Attorney's Manual that prevented, or rather suggested, I should say, suggested that U.S. attorneys should no longer prosecute white hat hackers for cybersecurity-related research. So researchers should not be prosecuted. And that's what we were talking about, this giant sea change in how the Department of Justice was approaching hackers and being more friendly. And he had great things to say at that conference. He talked about Aaron Swartz and how he's missed and how his voice would be really greatly appreciated these days with respect to things like content moderation, disinformation and misinformation on platforms. And he had a lot of really heartfelt comments. And I think his comments were really, really well received. And now that's the same exact FBI agent that's on the stand testifying as a government witness to prosecute a developer of open source software. So it's a really kind of crazy small world.
Well, it's also a world where, you know, you have to think about who you're talking to. I mean, are you surprised the person that you solicited to be on a panel in front of a bunch of hackers, basically telling them to trust DOJ, to trust the feds, is now somebody hopefully you would not say that about?
Well, I do. I think his words were sincere when he was at the Hope Conference. I don't think that they were.
What happened to him then?
Well, I think this he has a different view of this case. I think a lot of people have differing views of this particular case. And his role in the case was very limited as well, was to investigate various things that went over into the Tornado Cache system. And you know, and whether threat actors were using that particular system, and he was a fact witness. It also is not for him to decide which cases are prosecuted and which cases are not. If you think about what the FBI does, they're fact finders. They go around and they investigate facts. They bring them to the lawyers, and the lawyers are the ones that make the decision based on this notion of prosecutorial discretion as to whether or not to bring a case against somebody.
Right. But I mean, if you look at DOJ now as compared to where they were in 2022, it's not the same organization. It's been corrupted. And people say things that they never would have said before just to survive. And this holds true of every part of that agency. It's, you know, I don't relish saying that, but, you know, the proof is in the news every single day.
Look, I don't disagree with that. I think I have a better view of the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Southern District of New York. I think they're very aggressive, but they're extraordinarily smart and capable lawyers. I do think, though, that they overreach and that they bring cases in this particular venue that shouldn't have been brought. I think Virgil's case is a case on point in that respect. I think there was very, very tenuous connections to New York. And I think this particular case as well has very tenuous connections to New York. So I think venue might have been proper in Seattle, which was where Roman Storm lived. But I'll tell you, it's a terrifying prospect to me when writers of code are being prosecuted for people misusing that particular code, and it may be out of their hands as to whether or not they can stop this. This is an extraordinarily frightening precedent that I think we're facing right now. And whether the jury acquits or not is I think going to have really massive ramifications to the open source and the developer and the hacker community.
Did you have any predictions based on what you saw today? Were you able to tell any expressions from the jury or anything?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the jury is hard to read. It's really a mixed bunch. Some people are, I think, you know, really on the ball and taking notes. Others are kind of laid back, seem to be a little bit more passive. But everyone was paying attention during these closing arguments today because that's where you have this opportunity to really wrap up the story in some cohesive manner. I think that the defense really did a great job today in raising the specter of reasonable doubt here and explaining what reasonable doubt is in terms that a jury could understand, something that would make you reasonably in your own life hesitate about a particular decision. I think that I'd be very happy but surprised to see an acquittal on all three counts. I think that the sanctions count, these are all conspiracy counts as well. So they didn't actually have to do the thing. It's just conspiring to do the thing, committing some kind of overt act, in furtherance of a conspiracy. So I think the money transmission charge, I wouldn't be surprised if the jury acquitted on that. I think on the money laundering charge, I think it's 50-50. And I think on the sanctions charge, the IEEPA violation, that's the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, conspiracy to violate that particular statute, which was the exact same charge that Virgil faced, I'd be surprised if there was an acquittal on that. I'd be happy if there was, but I think it's a tough case for the defense to fend off. So we will see. Look, we might have a verdict tomorrow because the jury, I don't think, deliberated at all. I think they're going to come in tomorrow and deliberate for the entirety of the day. There's only three charges. They could have a verdict in a day. I think if they come back really quickly, it's probably not a great sign. But if they take their time and really think about these issues, I hope that they come to the right conclusion, which to my mind would be not guilty.
All right. Interesting. Well, no doubt we'll have some news next week, and we'll keep following it. So Tornado Cash, and where can people find out more about this? Because there's been precious little coverage of it.
Yeah, I think that's right. A lot of the crypto news outlets like CoinDesk, everybody's been covering that, but the mainstream media and the mainstream tech outlets have not been paying the attention to this case that I think it deserves. So I'm glad that we spent some time on it today. I appreciate that.
Yeah, even the tech outlets aren't covering it, which is weird. You'd expect them to see the importance of it.
Yeah, it really, really is. And again, major implications to the open source community if this results in a guilty verdict.
All right, shall we take some phone calls?
Yes, we shall.
Well, before we do, can you test the dial tone? Let's see how clean a line we have here. I always like to check these things. Oh, there's a bit of a hum there. Let's see if we can get rid of that somehow. It's a little loud this week. We want to go in as silent as we can. Sometimes we have to touch certain things. I'm sure the heat doesn't help. You know, it's kind of like wavering. It's such a... You can keep that on. That's a nice sound.
It's going to sound fast for a reorder soon.
Yeah, but there is a louder hum this week than there was. That's better.
You got to tell me when to stop. It's going to do a reorder.
All right, let's try one more time.
Hold on.
Just hit a button. See, that's good. That's good. Leave that.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
It could be
Don't
way
touch
better.
Anything, and we'll be fine.
But someday.
I should warn people, don't call yet because the line isn't even operational yet. You will hear a hum as you're talking to us. So please don't tell us you hear a hum. We know you're going to hear a hum, but the people listening won't hear the hum, and the archive won't hear the hum, and we won't hear the hum.
Yeah, you hear the hum, so we don't have to.
And if Rob or Gila or Alex say something, you might have difficulty hearing them. So please turn down the stereo, whatever you've got going on, so you can hear their gentle voices in the distance. And to the three of you, please talk as loudly as you possibly can when addressing the caller.
We shall do our best, especially considering that when we unmute, you could probably hear our air conditioner as well.
Well, that is the workaround for everything.
A considerate person would turn off the air conditioner, but we'll talk about that later. 802-321-4225.
Oh, we want them to be there to listen and, and in a healthy state. So.
The phone line is now active, 802-321-4225. That didn't take long, did it? And let's see who or what we have. Are you ready? Do we have a call, Kyle? Oh, they hung up and called back.
Yeah, that was the end of one call and beginning of another
Let's jump in. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Emmanuel.
A rebel, you know, it's actually good to hear your voice because we talked to you 2 weeks ago. You were in Siberia. And right after we talked to you, a plane in Siberia crashed. So we wanted to make sure.
Well, a plane in eastern Russia crashed.
It's Siberia. Russia. You were both in Siberia. And we're just you weren't responsible for it.
Well, there was an earthquake in eastern Russia today.
Yeah, what the hell are you doing over there? Are you
back.
Still there? Oh, you're back. Okay, so...
Yeah, I'm back.
All right, well, the earthquake definitely has nothing to do with you then.
Right.
So how was Siberia?
Good. I mean, I went to Tashkent, Uzbekistan first.
Uh-huh. Well, you have to see that. I mean, how do you miss that?
Well, yeah, and then I took a train. I was going to go to like this place called Samarkand, Uzbekistan. It's like 2 hours away, which ended up being 4 hours away because this train, it was so hot, it was 105 degrees. Uh-huh. And they said, well, the train's going 35 miles an hour because it's so hot that something about the tracks can't handle it or something like that. And this train had no air conditioning. It was one of those Soviet style trains. When I first walked onto it, I thought it was in like India or something.
Yeah, that's what those trains are like. They're old and they're rugged. But
right.
I'm confused, Rebel. I thought Siberia was supposed to be cold. You're telling me it's hot.
No. This was Uzbekistan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I took the new train back, the regular fast train, the new modern train back. So, let's see. So what else? You know, there was a somebody on Zoom got hacked in the MTA, the Transit Authority.
Okay, that doesn't really sound like a big headline, but what happened?
All right, well, let me read you this article from the Risk Digest.
Oh, you don't? Wait, the Risk Digest still comes out? I haven't read that since the 1990s. Wow.
Yeah. Hang on.
You okay?
According to sources.
Is Peter Neumann still editing it?
I don't know. The MTA's New York City Transit.
Okay, why are you talking like that?
I'm imitating you in the 90s.
Are you trying to say that I talk like that in the 1990s?
No, because one of the archives, it's slower. I don't know why.
Well, maybe you should tell us which one it is. We have the technology now. We can fix that.
Oh.
You pick one show to make fun of me from and expect me to know what you're talking about?
It's actually a couple of them.
Cassette decks weren't where they are now. So, yeah, it was a little bit tricky.
Basically, they Zoom feed like they had Zoom. You know, they were talking from one location to another. And
can't believe you expected me to know that.
Somebody forgot a setting to set some option, and somebody got in and, you know, made all these, you know, remarks and, you know, posted some, like, I think, X-rated material. So
this is what happened on Zoom.
Well, if you don't know how to use settings and, like,
right,
you know, what options to set.
Uh-huh. Well, they're too busy running trains, so, you know, as long as they do that properly.
Right. And, you know, there's a 2600 meeting this Friday.
That's what Rob said.
Hopefully they'll talk about the HOPE conference, because I'd like to volunteer for the networking thing, you know, because, you know, I'd like to learn how, you know, computer networks work. So, you know, I figured, you know, volunteering, like, the network part of...
You know, Rebel, you just reminded me, the HOPE conference is coming up. Boy, I gotta check the calendar more often. We just put the schedule up today, so if you go to hope.net, you'll see the schedule of all the talks, which is pretty awesome. We have such an amazing group of people, and it is going to be a ton of fun. We started this thing called the HOPE Scholarship, where basically people who can't afford to go to HOPE wind up getting scholarships from people who want to donate tickets to them. And so far, we have covered everybody who has asked to get a scholarship. I believe we have. We might need some extra people to come and donate, so that students and people that can't afford the ticket price can basically go to an event that could change their lives for the better. Hope.net has all the info. It's happening August 14th. Wait, August 12th. I'm having a heat stroke here.
15th, 16th, and 17th.
15th through 17th. I knew the 15th was in there somewhere. 15th through 17th. Okay.
So you remember by realizing it is the 16th incarnation of this event, and the 16th will be in the middle of this year's
No,
event.
I was remembering the first HOPE, which I think was August 13th and 14th of 1994.
Well, we've been throwing back a lot to the original event, so...
You know, someone tuning in just now would think that I live in the 1990s, because I keep mentioning the 1990s, but I really don't. I really don't. This is the latest HOPE we've ever had. It's never been this late in the year. It's right before, it's that week when summer ends and school begins. There's a weekend between that. And that's where we are at St. John's. And it's going to be awesome because, you know, we'll have the run of the place. We won't be crowded out of the dormitories, and we'll have all kinds of space to just hang out. And it'll be a blast. And it's a ton of fun. It's you're in New York City, but you have all this space, and you can go to New York City anytime you want, to Manhattan, that is, or you can hang out at the Hacker Conference and do all kinds of fun things. You're 10 minutes away from the biggest Chinatown in America, which is something to say and something to experience.
Yeah, and all of that surrounds this site where we'll have just that incredible lineup, and you get this opportunity to ask questions, to participate, to learn new skills. There's a lot of room for breakouts and workshops, things that teach you something, that you might come away with a new skill or may not realize you had a skill all along. It's just that kind of experience, but really the conversation, the discussion, the dialogue, we'll be sharing it, we'll be capturing it. You'll be able to basically be in proximity to people that are pursuing and curious, really excellent topics, excellent information, and they're using this event as a way to share it with the world, to bring people's sort of collective knowledge up to speed with whatever that is that they're passionate about. So we really we're looking forward to that, and we know that everybody there physically really has this incredible experience talking to people and sharing.
Can I just, speaking of incredible experiences, can I just point something out right now? We have Rebel on the phone, and he's turned up, and he hasn't talked over us once. Rebel, what did they teach you over there? They obviously taught you some good manners over in Siberia.
I was just going to say that you could also network with people to get IT jobs at the whole conference.
That is true, absolutely. There are a lot of people that use this period in the summer to attend events, and they are essentially on vacation or taking a little bit of time away, but you never know who you're talking to. And if you're looking to get a start, looking to change or shift your careers or enhance some of your skills, maybe because you've realized your job is encompassing more in the field of information or technology, and you could get ideas, you could get names and suggestions, references, that kind of thing is always going on, and absolutely a big part of what I'm saying. You're absolutely right. I mean, it is through the course of socializing, hanging out with people, that you'll understand where they're coming from. You'll be able to share stories, and you never know what it might lead to. It could really change your life and help you. And that's really the goal, is to get people to mix it up, get people to become familiar outside of maybe their line of work doesn't really intersect with what you do necessarily. This is a great opportunity to have shared interests, to get around, check out different things, but also mingle a little bit and like just find out what's going on, find out where you could learn more about something, or like you said, get some leads for a career shift or some kind of opportunity that might be out there for you.
Yeah, I have to say, of all the hopes that we've done, this is the 16th. This might be the most challenging. And I say that because, not because of the people we're working with, because it's been a dream, and we really have such a great staff, but just the climate is, and I don't mean the climate change climate, that's a problem too. I mean the society, what's going on, everyone's at each other's throats, and this is just overly hostile, combative tone in the air from so many different directions. And that's one of the reasons we decided to go annual, because we felt people needed an outlet, a way to learn more about technology, to take power over technology, and to feel like their voices matter. But, you know, we've had all kinds of challenges involved in people traveling here from other countries. People are very reluctant to do that. We've had all sorts of pushback from various places. And, people that say you shouldn't even have a conference in the United States as long as the United States is in the state it's in, which to me seems very self-defeating, because, well, if you just stop doing whatever it is you do because the government is doing bad things, what do you do? You know, you either leave or you just wind up cowering at home. And I don't think either one of those is an answer. You need to come back stronger than ever. You need to keep saying the things that you want to say, learning about the things you want to learn about, and not being intimidated. And I can't stress that enough. I understand, you know, people from Canada, people from Europe, why they don't want to come. And of course, you know, we have the virtual attendee for people that want to be a part of things and can't make it here. And you have so many good reasons not to come here because of what they're doing at the border. That's, you know, understandable. But for the people that are here, I think it's up to us to make things stronger, to make things better. And it's not easy. It's going to take time. It's going to take effort. But, you know, not doing this for 2025, I think, would have been a mistake because, you know, who knows what 2026 is going to be like. But I do know we'll be stronger after this conference for doing what we do. I just hope we see more and more people come by and do that. And let's not be too judgmental about what hackers stand for or what people should be doing, because this is all new territory for everybody. There are some people who are mad because we have somebody from Doge as one of our speakers. Well, you know, this is a great opportunity to ask some questions. This is a guy who basically was fired from Doge for being honest. It might not be enough. That might not be enough to make up for his sins, but, you know, he's going to be asked some hard questions. And, it's a great opportunity to have that dialogue that you wouldn't have ordinarily. And, you know, you don't have to approve of every single speaker. We have hundreds, up to 200 speakers. You don't have to approve everybody who's there. We have, Joshua Aaron, who was on a couple of weeks ago, who wrote the Ice Block app. Well, some people are mad at that because this guy is, sticking his thumb in the eye of big government who are trying to, throw people into gulags and things like that. So we're going to have a wide variety of viewpoints and voices, and you're not going to agree with all of them. And there's, all kinds of reasons why you could come up with reasons not to come up with excuses not to partake in this. But I think it's so important that we engage in the dialogue and have these conversations, because not doing it, that option just, it really seems to hurt us more than anything. So I really hope this conference proves that we're here to stay and we can do this on an annual basis, because then I know that we're going to survive whatever it is that's ahead. But if we cave in, like I'm seeing so many big companies and universities and other entities do, that's not a good look. That's not a good future. So it's a big opportunity.
I just would reiterate that it's about, I think the moment in itself, it feels like a lot of things have accelerated. We'd like to be up to pace, essentially, with how fast things have occurred, how accelerated a time we live in has really appeared. And to do this kind of event, we create a moment where you can increase the frequency. Like, this is like high frequency, a ton of information, a lot of interactions. That ability, I mean, we encourage people to bring information, bring things you want to share. We'll have an incredible network. Mm-hmm. We'll have access to the web, and all of these discussions will be going on. But if you have stuff you want to share, if you have equipment, if you want to set up machines, if you want to trade a data set or some machine learning,
you have an old computer setup from the 1990s.
If you want, yeah, retro stuff, older, newer, all of it. We want to be a hub for this. We want this activity to be facilitated in a way that we can move a lot of information, get people empowered, get people starting projects, finishing projects. If you want to distribute stuff, if you've written something, if you want to just basically get that out to the world, we want all of that activity to go on, and we're going to do our best to set up the systems to facilitate that. So by all means, if you have equipment you want to bring, like Rebel just intimated retro systems all the way up to current systems. Whatever capacity you can possibly bring with you, we'll try to accommodate and hook you up. And basically, we want to facilitate as high bandwidth, as high frequency communication, both in person and digitally, and all of it. That incredible fervor is what we want to set the conditions for, and that includes the discussions, hallway discussions, as well as those in the lecture halls. We want all of it to be captured and distributed, and really just accelerate what is going on in the face of what we all have sort of witnessed politically or in the media or globally. Be that as it may, we want to continue in that spirit of matching pace with a world that is itself feeling like it's moving incredibly quickly in certain directions. Let's get all of that activity in one place, and that's I think what we're appreciating about what will coalesce next month.
And I can't say enough about our volunteers who make this happen. Who pour themselves into the organization and the operation of a conference like HOPE. It's huge, and it's almost unbelievable the hurdles they are getting over in order to be able to do this themselves. People are going through so much that we don't talk about. You wonder how they're able to continue to put in so much and give so much, and it just says something to the type of people they are, and I'm honored to be in their midst. But we need more. We need more people. We need people to join us and to become part of this magical community. And you know, HOPE conferences are always a place where you can try that out, and you can try your hand at running a particular part of it, becoming involved in something that maybe you never were involved in before. Because that is the only way this is able to happen, is by people volunteering their efforts and pooling resources and just creating a unique event that people will remember for the rest of their lives. Hey, if you only go to one HOPE conference, you will remember that for the rest of your life. There are people who have gone to all of them. There are people who have gone to many of them. And that's why we are so keen on opening this up to students and to people who otherwise could never go to a HOPE conference. You can help make that happen by donating a ticket to them. We never tried this before, but I am blown away by the number of people who have done this, because you know there's all kinds of reasons why you might not be able to make it this year, whether it's work related, health related, government related, you know, country related. There are all kinds of reasons, but you can share the experiences that you've had in the past, or just your ideology, with somebody that you've never met, and basically change their life. They will meet people, they will hear things, they will become involved in a community that they may stay involved with for decades to come. And you can make all that possible. And I'm just so grateful that we have so many good people in our community that no matter what happens, I'm not worried as long as we're all around. So hope.net has all the information. Rebel, I'm going to give you a couple minutes to say whatever else you need to say, and then we're going to open up.
Okay, yes. And I think, 2,600 meetings should be called 2,600 gatherings now.
What's different?
Well, I mean, meetings sound too, like, formal, you know?
But they never were formal. They always were exactly the way they are now.
Right, but I mean, it's more of a gathering then.
I suppose, but you know, you should have suggested that back in 1987 when we started them. a lot of stationery has been printed up since then.
What if you dial zero on your phone? You had to dial tones. What if you dial zero?
Say what now?
What
if you dial zero when you were testing out the phone, like on your phone there?
You want us to call the operator?
Yeah. What if you dial zero?
Well, I don't want to call the operator. They can get angry.
Would you get a 9X operator?
I don't know. Now I'm curious. I'm not going to do it, though, because
I'm
scared.
Okay, well, when I hang up, you should try it.
No, I'm not going to do that. Kyle, keep the phone away from me. Don't let me do it. No, calling the operator when you don't have a reason to call an operator is a crime.
Well, no, or at least it's... I have long distance, so may have the area code in Pittsburgh or something like that.
It's 412. You don't need an operator. I can tell you.
All right. Ask for the country code and city code in Tashkent, Uzbekistan. How's that?
Oh, boy. Yeah, okay.
Let's talk about Tashkent, Uzbekistan. While, before you do that, I'll just briefly talk about Russia. Siberia, the Novosibirsk, the Siberian city, it's just like St. Petersburg. Everyone's helpful. I was looking, I was at this restaurant. It was like this nice, like, it was kind of like the restaurants we go to on St. Mark's. They were like, you know, like everybody's like all chill there and like hip and everything. I said, you know, this waiter's wearing this hat with a, like, it's like a graffiti thing, like a New York City kind of a graffiti kind of hat. And by the way, this all, every country you go in Europe, even in Russia, New York City Yankee hats. What is with the New York City Yankee? I mean, you know, the New York City Yankee in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw somebody on the plane. I said, hey, you like the Yankees? You know, I like the Mets. And they didn't understand what I was saying.
Well, the Mets need to send more hats over there because there's no reason they wouldn't like the Mets.
Anyway, yeah, so everybody was helpful. The guy, you know, showed me, hey, well, go to this store, and this is where I got it. And trying to look for the store, and, you know, I didn't find it. I went to the restaurant the next day, and I said, oh, did you find the store? Did you find, you know, whatever? And I said, no, I couldn't find it. And they said, well, you know, I'll take you to it after you're done eating. So he literally, after I was done, he literally took me to where it was. He actually went out of his way, and I mean, this was in like some building, and it was like one of those underground kind of things. That's probably why I couldn't find it.
People do things like that everywhere. They really do, and it's amazing.
Yeah, he literally went out of his way and took me to the store, and it was, you know, they were dapping each other up. It was just like New York City. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I mean, that's what I liked about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I told, when I came back, you know, I told the customs person, you know, you get to go through exit customs or whatever. And no, I said, you know, I wanted the fact. They actually took me seriously.
So it was a good time.
So wait, did you actually defect or not?
Yeah, don't say that to a customs person.
Yeah, fortunately I didn't. But
yeah,
the metro is so nice. It's just so comfortable.
Wait, do they have a metro in that
Siberia, in Novosibirsk, Siberia? Yeah, they have. I mean, it's like two lines, but it's just like, you know, Moscow. And,
well, okay.
I mean,
on that note, do they use the same cars?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, because I'm familiar with those cars. I think they're green, right?
No, they're like blue, old Soviet.
Blue,
cars.
Yeah, that's it. And you'll find those in Belarus. I think you'll even find them in Ukraine as well.
I found them in Tashkent, Uzbekistan.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're back and that you had a good time. And look forward to talking more at Hope.
Yeah. Dial zero. Get a dial phone and dial zero and see what you get.
All right, you know what? Maybe we'll try it.
I don't know.
Kiss her with me on the line, though.
Yeah, that's yeah. You saw right through that. Okay, but we are going to take another phone call. But it was good hearing your voice.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Hey.
So, you want to try it, Kyle? Well, first we have to get
it
out. Will
it reveal something? Like,
no, I don't. Well, you know what? I'm not sure. I don't know where this phone is. Yeah, you know what? It might. You're right.
I'll try it. I'll try it off air, and then I'll let you try it on air.
Okay. No, I think I know what it's going to do, and it might actually reveal the weird ass phone company we use out here that we don't want anyone to know about. Gila, go ahead.
Yes, we do have a question, a Hope related question from our friend Tim in Connecticut, who asks: is there going to be a smartphone app this year?
Is there going to be a what now?
We don't
smartphone
know.
App for Hope.
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I was going to ask that question myself earlier today. But I didn't.
We don't know exactly yet. A lot of, oddly enough, a lot of the best efforts from organizing the schedule that way come from the community. Someone's just like, hey, look what I did. And they share it. And it's actually incredible. And so we've taken to having direct links in the past to just basically advertising this will be posted. And usually when someone comes up with, sorry, I'm doing two things at once, it comes up with the best one or one that we want to go ahead and reference, we'll place it on the wiki or place it on the website in a prominent way. And we've indicated in the past, I think, like my point was, we've had links to it in the program, and that last time I think we didn't even put a direct link, or people didn't want QR codes, so we just said that there would be one, and eventually I think there was one. So we don't have information on that right away.
If there's something though that you think we can benefit from, that you have expertise in, we are open to hearing about that. And that goes from everything from, you know, apps to badges to the things we haven't even thought of yet. Everyone pitches in and comes up with some unique part of Hope that becomes tradition, and this is a great opportunity to become part of that. Go ahead, Rob.
No doubt someone will.
Yeah. Now that the schedule has been posted on the site, that info is there. If anyone who would like to volunteer their talents wants to pull that data into any sort of form that would be helpful, such as a phone app.
Yeah, there you go. It's all there. Hope.net. We have another phone call?
Yes, and I was going to say we could also try that dialing. I think it's safe enough to try the zero, but we can take this call first.
Yeah, let's take this call first. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to know if I choose to buy a ticket in person on the first day of the conference, what time would they go on sale?
Actually, that information is on Hope.net, too, under the news section. It should be the first page you see. They have hours. It's starting on Thursday and running through the weekend.
Oh, okay. So, like, 10 or something
well,
like
that? Well, you have to look at the site. I don't have the site in front of me, but if you go to Hope.net, you'll see it.
And I do have the site in front of me.
Rob has a site in front of him. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, registration is open on Thursday the 14th from 4:30 to 9:30 p.m., and then 8:30 a.m. on Friday and onward.
And I should point out, it's going to be $25 more. If you're really?
$25
yes.
More. Yes. Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. But the virtual, that'll stay the same. I mean, that price doesn't fluctuate, right?
I'm sorry. Say again?
The type to attend virtually, that price will remain the same, right?
Yes, that will remain the same.
Okay, and are you still going to be providing the printed programs at the venue?
We're going to try. We're working on that right now, actually.
Yeah, we're doing our best.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it is good. It is good to have something to hold in your hand.
I agree. I agree completely.
Yeah, we feel the same way, because everyone asks, and there's all kinds of chaos and questions, and everyone wants to get oriented. And it's a great way to just get a whole bunch of stuff in one place for everyone to be aware as they get acclimated with the venue. So absolutely, we'll have something like that. Fingers crossed.
Yes.
Okay, and the last thing, during the show tonight, you talked a bit, you read a letter from Italy, and you said the person was concerned that he wasn't able to access old episodes of Off the Hook.
On YouTube.
And I didn't hear you mention the WBAI archive. As far as I know, that has tons of episodes of Off the Hook.
I wouldn't mention, because we already have the archive on our local server, and the BAI archive lately has been kind of corrupted.
A little glitchy.
Yeah, we've been hearing all kinds of reports about that, but there's no need to go there, because we have everything saved locally from 1988 on. And it's always there. But what the letter was referring to was YouTube, where our shows also show up, but they do the auto captioning thing. But then we got into this whole thing about censoring auto captioning and the problems that YouTube has. But it would be great if we could somehow introduce captioning on our copies as well. Of course, we need to have some kind of video display of that. But, you know, there's all sorts of ideas people have that we are willing to support.
Right. What was the problem with the episodes on the WBAI archive? I didn't hear about anything being corrupted.
What we heard over the past few months was that shows were only 5 minutes long, or that they were glitching out while people were listening to them. I'm not sure if it only affected live streams or if it affected the archive as well. I believe it affected the archive as well, from what I was told. We can guarantee the ones that we have locally are fine. So that's why we recommend that.
So that is the best place to go, to your website for the old episode.
Yeah, we have all of them there.
Okay. All right. Well, look forward to the conference, and it should be a lot of fun.
It will be. It will
be.
Thank you. All right. Take care.
Thanks.
And people who are worried about getting there, it's easy. Don't fret about it because, you know, it's not in Midtown Manhattan. Yes, we know that. It's not in Midtown Manhattan, but that's a good thing. We used to be in Midtown Manhattan before they tore down the Hotel Pennsylvania. I wish I hadn't done that, but they did. But, you know, Manhattan is hugely expensive, very crowded. If you are driving, you don't have any chance of finding a cheap place to park. And at St. John's, we have free parking. So you can actually go to St. John's, park your car for the weekend, and you would save as much money as the admission fee for the conference. Yeah, because you'd have to pay extra just to park your car if we were in Manhattan. Not to mention venues are extremely expensive. We're probably talking three or four times the admission fee would be necessary for having this in a venue in Manhattan. That would be more crowded and more uncomfortable as well. I could just go on and on about the advantages of having this in Queens. You know, we never intended to have it in Queens, but we were forced to look around after the hotel was closing. We discovered this awesome place, and it really has worked out. This will be our third conference there. And, you know, it's near the airports. If you're flying in from different parts of the world, it's near JFK. It's near LaGuardia. You don't have to stay in Midtown Manhattan. Yeah, I know it's inconvenient if you stay in Midtown Manhattan and commute back and forth every day because you want to be near Broadway. Do the Broadway thing after the conference. You have plenty of time. And the commute isn't that bad, but, you know, doing it every day, I think could be, you know, a bit much. But it's still, you know, less than an hour. I've been to conferences where I've had to take buses into the countryside, where I've had to go underground, where I've had to endure a heat of like 120 degrees. It's, you know, you go through all kinds of things to get someplace. But when you're there, you're in a magical environment. And that is something that we can guarantee you is a magical environment if you got to hope.
Yes. There's a lot of decisions we make that may not be things that are forefront for you, but we have to make those decisions to sustain ourselves. You don't know, but there are
lot
of aspects of hosting something like this that require us to think of a lot of eventualities, a lot of aspects of it that accommodate everyone. And the idea is for us to be able to sustain ourselves such that it's a comfortable environment for the sharing of information in this way, and so that we can continue on. And we're, as we've said, you know, we're always, or at least currently, we're recruiting. We want as much help. We want as much participation, and we're thinking long term. This is an important short-term thing to nurture, but we are thinking how to sustain it over time, and we've made those decisions, and this is the best place to do this. This is the best way for us to move forward in this moment and for as long as we possibly can.
The cool thing about St. John's is we can stay fairly small and be fine, or we can grow 10 times the size we are now, and they can handle that as well. And there's no pressure. It's what we as a community decide to do. It's just very relaxed, and also everything works.
Yeah,
which at the hotel was not the case.
Yeah, there are a lot of our volunteer groups that people have been involved with, I'm sure, over the years from way back at the hotel, and just what we've evolved into, the way we're able to manage this is kind of. It's still a very busy event. I mean, as someone, I spend a lot of time helping out, and it is more relaxing when you check in with people and talk to people that are, albeit incredibly busy, oftentimes stressed, oftentimes haven't slept enough or had enough food. But though the unexpected things, the extreme stressors, I think, are not as evident, and you can see it. Some people actually enjoy themselves while working or volunteering, and the reshaping certain things. I know from a network perspective, with like you said, in all the auditoriums and lecture halls, just what is built in and ready for the type of event that we host on a campus like that. It makes the most sense. And from many of the people that worked at the hotel previously, I think that it's noticeable, or at least they recollect the kind of heavy lift it was to like run cables or run, set up furniture, get things reoriented to accommodate us in the best way. Those folks, I think when you talk to them now, they have an appreciation just for how accommodating the campus is for lectures, for discussions and talks. So it's been really worthwhile, I think, for some of the things that we were just getting installed and ready to go in the nick of time. Now there's a lot. We've done it a couple times, as you said, and there's just a lot more familiarity, and it is, I think, logically something that we're able to do. As much it is really a heavy lift, and we expand, we do all this stuff organizationally, but we're able to provide the things people expect and do it with a level of competence that is reliable, that's predictable, and a lot less awkward in some cases. So we're very pleased to do our best in this environment to host it.
Gila, go ahead. You're muted, Gila.
I know, because Rob had the mouse. Huh. sorry, dear. So do you want to remind people that Hope runs on volunteers? And if you want to volunteer in any way, drop a note to volunteers@hope.net. And there will be happy people on the other end who will be glad to hear from you.
Yeah.
Anything that happens at Hope happens because of our volunteers. And the more people who get involved, the better it is. So volunteers@hope.net. I did have a different question, which I'm assuming I know the answer to. Someone asked, what do the Hope badges look like this year? And I'm guessing we're not going to find out until August.
Pretty much, yes. We're not going to disclose information like that. Yeah. 802-321-4225. We have time for one more call if it comes in soon.
And we do need all types of volunteers, though. If you want to MC and like introduce talks, you want to you have a specialty or skill that you want to bring to it, please get in touch with us.
Yeah, when you write in to volunteers@hope.net, please tell us what it is you'd like to do, what you're good at, what you'd like to try, and we'll see if we can find a fit for you.
There's also a very good page on the Hope site about the travel. And you're talking about this possibly being intimidating for folks, but it's got all the info there. If you're coming in by plane, it's you can see how to get there from the airports. If you're coming by train, if you're coming by bus, if you're driving, if you're coming from the local hotels, if you're coming internationally, there's a good set of details and everything on the Hope site on the travel page that you will find enlightening.
Please look at that section, because we busted our asses making that work, and it's very I guess helpful. I hope it's helpful, but we'll see. We have a phone call, and good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello, it's Lou Aichu from Washington, D.C., our nation's capital.
Yes, so I know. Yes, what's on your mind?
I promise it's just as sweaty down here as it is up here in New York.
No, I think it's probably worse down there.
Oh, well, yeah. So, about Tornado Cash, which was brought up earlier on the show and in overtime, cryptocurrency mixers are not a magic bullet. They have been, transactions have been reversed by various three-letter organizations. They escape the name of me right now. There's so many. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I know that. And if I recall correctly, I think some of the first mixers were the subject of some academic research that I then published on these mixers. And then obviously that let the bad guys knew that the transactions could be reversed. And then so better mixers came out. I've been involved in a number of digital asset traces for stolen digital assets where the assets went through various mixers, not necessarily Tornado Cash, but Tornado Cash seems to be the most effective privacy-enhancing technology on the blockchain for breaking up the block of your particular transactions. And that's perhaps why they're going after them. But yeah, mixers have been around for a while, and there's legitimate use cases for them, and there's people that abuse them. And the danger is to going after the developers rather than the criminals when those types of systems are abused, in my opinion.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. There's software already for artists trying to protect their art. Exactly, I was going to mention Nightshade, but you could probably use that on AI-generated art to achieve the same effect, depending on what steganographic techniques are employed.
Alex, you have something to add? Alex, you got to unmute yourself. I'm sorry, it was my fault this time. Hold on.
Yes.
There you go.
I was very confused there for a moment, but I wasn't aware that they were using steganographic encryption techniques to embed data within AI content like that. But the detection of the use of steganographic encryption goes back to the early 2000s, really back in the wake of September 11th, when everybody was still concerned about terrorism those days, and there was this fear that terrorists were going to communicate by way of hidden messages embedded in like a couch for sale or something like that on Craigslist, and that was going to be the go word. So there was a lot of research done into the detection of the use of steganographic encryption by hiding messages and images and things. And in particular, I worked with a guy at Dartmouth's Institute for Security Technology Studies, his name is Hani Farid. F-A-R-I-D, and he did a lot of research into the detection of Steg in this area, and now has progressed on and moved on from Dartmouth. I think he's over at UC Berkeley now, but he's really evolved his tool set for detection mechanisms to be able to detect the generation of deep fakes and AI-generated content. So I think he's taken the detection of Steg itself. I don't know what the hell's going on outside my window now. And now using it to detect AI-generated content. So I'm going to go on mute here. I don't know what the hell is happening.
All right, Alex, thank you. Thank you for that. Any other words, caller, before we go?
Everyone has a different standard. So Meta's got a standard, Google's got a standard, they all have different names, but they all share the same technique as they actually encode their information in the spectra of images generated using their models. Now, what is spectra? I might be wrong, so somebody please correct me on this, but essentially what it is a graph you can graph it out, as a spectrum of, let's say, chroma. Well, I'm not sure about chroma. Let's just say color, right? So to graph out the color that is used in the image, there's different waves and peaks, and what the companies do is that they encode the information there as amplitude in a certain region, such and such, and, well, Unmarker is able to just detect that and distort it, not to entirely erase it, and steganographic, of course, so nobody will be any the wiser.
Very cool. Do you have information about what is the software called again? Unmark, you said?
Unmarker. It's on GitHub.
Cool.
Okay.
It sort of reminds me of something I heard at the very last ShmooCon. There's a guy from a presenter who worked at Microsoft, and he was explaining a standard for doing essentially this, assigning AI-generated images, or not just AI-generated, but images in general to validate, where did this come from? And in the context of verifying journalistic imagery. Supposedly the BBC finds their content using this system. And like I said, I was listening to this and I thought, well, what if somebody just erased this metadata? Because it is metadata. It is steganographic. And just like this Unmarker software, you can just obliterate it. I'm not sure if this is something that is going to work, a method that will be viable in the future. I believe that we should be able, as people, we should at least be able to discern, is this real, is this fake? I mean, I pretty much learned the writing style of ChatGPT and these other models. I have a pretty good idea of what an AI-generated artwork looks like. It's not perfect.
But it'll get better, I'm sure. We'll have to be even more...
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We used to say, oh, these computers are never going to be able to draw something like that. Well, here they are. So, well, we'll just have to see how it develops.
Yep. I look forward to it. It'll be fun. It'll be interesting. It'll be a challenge.
Well, and...
Go ahead.
Thus the tools. Thus all of these different tools for analyzing the stuff. Go ahead with your last statement.
Yeah, I need to remember... I need to pretend like this is ham radio and or just radio in general for this matter and wait a bit before... Because this is an internet phone. It's an analog phone with an ATA. So, yeah, there's a bit of delay.
Interesting. Okay. Well, at least it's a phone. You know, it's a lot of people don't use phones anymore either.
Well, I have something to say about Telex. I'm sure Rebel would enjoy this, but I have an update on the Library of Congress tape recorder that I think I brought up on the show 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
3 weeks, I don't exactly remember. So I have it right here in front of me. On the top it says, Library of Congress, Vision for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, property of U.S. government. So I have stolen from the government now. On the back here, the model number, C76. Now, I've done some research and actually looked up these things on the internet. There's a bit of writing about this, specifically for musicians and stuff using this to manipulate tape loops. But they all are talking about one of these machines that has a white case, and it's almost all model number C1. This one I have right here in front of me is... actually, the model number C76. Difference is that instead of being white, it's all orange, which I guess would be a useful improvement for people who are visually impaired. But on the back here, it says, cassette book machine manufactured by Telex Communications, Incorporated, Rochester, Minnesota, for the Library of Congress. I looked up this company, Telex Communications, based out of Minnesota. The Wikipedia article is pretty short, but it says that they used to did historically manufacture hearing aids, so that's sort of accessibility tech. This machine is probably a continuation of that lineage. But they were bought and sold, as it says in the article, and now they use the brand to sell avionics, radio, and dispatch systems. So pretty interesting. Telex, was it Telex Communications? Did they manufacture Telex terminals? That's what I was trying to find out, but the information is pretty sparse, so I'm not sure.
Well, I would imagine they did with a name like Telex. I mean, that's what I know them as.
Yeah, right, but that was a pretty interesting connection.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks again for the call and giving us so much to think about and discuss.
Yeah. I was going to say something about Rebel.
It's best that you not go down that road.
Easily findable on Google, it's all on the internet. I mean, well, somebody should please go ahead and build him a time machine so that he can get answers to all his questions about telephonic always seems to generate to that. Oh, well.
We're going to leave it there. But thanks for your call, and we'll talk to you again soon. All right, and that's going to do it for us, because we're tired, hot, and sweaty. God, Kyle, what do you think it is in here? 120?
No.
No, I we shouldn't speak Fahrenheit. 34, 35?
Sure.
All right. Well, we don't have to stay here, so we're going to go. And
do you want to hear zero, though?
Oh, yeah, we're going to do that, weren't we? Okay,
just get it over with. Come on.
Let's get a dial tone. What, that's it?
That's it.
A reorder? Well, what happened to the operator? I want the operator.
They're busy.
Ah, that's not busy signal. That's an all circuits busy. I don't want to get into it now.
No, they're busy. Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
For more information or to write to us, oth@2600.com is our email address. Please go to hope.net for more information about the conference and show up at a local meeting this coming Friday, 2600.com/meetings for a full listing all around the world. We will be back next week, 7 p.m. on WBAI, 8 p.m. here on Channel 2600. Please keep your eyes open and question everything that you see, because
the operator's out of order. That's it.
Yeah. When you can't find an operator anymore, you know everything is falling apart. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening and for calling.
That was fun.
It was. Good night.